This is Audible.
Capital. A Critique of Political Economy by Karl Marx. Volume 3. The Process of Capitalist Production as a Whole. Edited by Friedrich Engels. Read by Derek LePage for Ukemi Audiobooks. Part 1. The Conversion of Surplus Value into Profit and of the Rate of Surplus Value into the Rate of Profit. Chapter 1. Cost, Price, and Profit. In Volume 1 we analyze the phenomena which constitute the process of capitalist production as such, as the immediate productive process, with no regard for any of the secondary effects of outside influences. But this immediate process of production does not exhaust the lifespan of capital. It is supplemented in the actual world by the process of circulation, which was the object of study in Volume 2. In the latter, namely in Part 3, which treated the process of circulation as a medium for the process of social reproduction, it developed that the capitalist process of production, taken as a whole, represents a synthesis of the processes of production and circulation. Considering what this third book treats, it cannot confine itself to general reflection relative to this synthesis. On the contrary, it must locate and describe the concrete forms which grow out of the movements of capital as a whole. In their actual movement, capitals confront each other in such concrete shape, for which the form of capital in the immediate process of production, just as its form in the process of circulation, appear only as special instances. The various forms of capital, as evolved in this volume, thus approach step by step the form which they assume on the surface of society, in the action of different capitals upon one another, in competition, and in the ordinary consciousness of the agents of production themselves. The value of every commodity produced in the capitalist way is represented in the formula, commodity value equals constant capital plus variable capital plus surplus value, or C plus V plus S. If we subtract surplus value from this value of the product, there remains a bare equivalent, or a substitute value in goods, for the capital value C plus V, constant capital plus variable capital, expended in the elements of production. For example, if the production of a certain article requires a capital outlay of £500, of which £20 are for the wear and tear of instruments of production, £380 for the materials of production, and £100 for labour power, and if the rate of surplus value is 100%, then the value of the product equals 400C plus 100V plus 100S equals £600. After deducting the surplus value of £100, there remains a commodity value of £500, which only replaces the expended capital of £500. This portion of the value of the commodity, which replaces the price of the consumed means of production and labour power, only replaces what the commodity costs the capitalist himself. For him, it, therefore, represents the cost price of the commodity. What the commodity costs the capitalist and its actual production cost are two quite different magnitudes. That portion of the commodity value, making up the surplus value, does not cost the capitalist anything, simply because it costs the labourer unpaid labour. Yet on the basis of capitalist production, after the labourer enters the production process, he himself constitutes an ingredient of the operating productive capital, which belongs to the capitalist. Therefore, the capitalist is the actual producer of the commodity. For this reason, the cost price of the commodity necessarily appears to the capitalist as the actual cost of the commodity. If we take K to be the cost price, the formula commodity value equals C plus V plus S turns into the formula commodity value equals K plus S. That is, the commodity value equals cost price K plus surplus value S. The grouping of the various value portions of a commodity which only replace the value of the capital expended in its production under the head of cost price expresses on the one hand the specific character of capitalist production. The capitalist cost of the commodity is measured by the expenditure of capital, while the actual cost of the commodity is measured by the expenditure of labour. Thus, the capitalist cost price of the commodity differs in quantity from its value, or its actual cost price. It is smaller than the value of the commodity, because, with commodity value equals K plus S, it is evident that K equals commodity value minus S. On the other hand, the cost price of a commodity is by no means simply a category which exists only in capitalist bookkeeping. The individualization of this portion of value is continually manifest in practice in the actual production of the commodity, because it has ever to be reconverted from its commodity form by way of the process of circulation into the form of productive capital, so that the cost price of the commodity always must repurchase the elements of production consumed in its manufacture. The category of cost price, on the other hand, has nothing to do with the formation of commodity value or with the process of self-expansion of capital. When I know that of the value of a commodity worth £600, 5/6 or £500 represent no more than an equivalent of the capital of £500 consumed in its production, and that it can therefore suffice only to repurchase the material elements of this capital, I know nothing as yet either of the way in which these 5/6 of the value of the commodity, which represent its cost price, are produced, or about the way in which the last sixth, which constitutes its surplus value, was produced. The investigation will show, however, that in capitalist economics the cost price assumes the false appearance of a category of value production itself. To return to our example, suppose the value produced by one labourer during an average social working day is represented by a money sum of 6 shillings. Then the advanced capital of £500 equals 400C plus 100V represents a value produced in 1,666 2/3 10-hour working days, of which 1,333 1/3 working days are crystallized in the value of the means of production, equals 400C, and 333 1/3 are crystallized in the value of labor power, equals 100V. Having assumed a rate of surplus value of 100%, the production of the commodity to be newly formed entails a labor expenditure equal to 100V plus 100S equals 666 2/3 10-hour working days. We know, then, see Capital, Volume 1, Chapter 9, that the value of the newly created product of £600 is composed of 1. The reappearing value of the constant capital of £400 expended for means of production, and 2. A newly produced value of £200. The cost price of the commodity, equals £500, comprises the reappearing 400C and 1/2 of the newly produced value of £200, equals 100V. That is, 2 elements of the commodity value which are of entirely different origin. Owing to the purposive nature of the labour expended during 666 2/3 10-hour working days, the value of the consumed means of production amounting to £400 is transferred from these means of production to the product. This previously existing value thus reappears as a component part of the value of the product, but is not created in the process of production of this commodity. It exists as a component of the value of the commodity only because it previously existed as an element of the invested capital. The expended constant capital is therefore replaced by that portion of the value of the commodity which this capital itself adds to that value. This element of the cost price, therefore, has a double meaning. On the one hand, it goes into the cost price of the commodity, because it is part of the commodity value which replaces consumed capital, and on the other hand, it forms an element of the commodity value only because it is the value of expended capital, or because the means of production cost so and so much. It is quite the reverse in the case of the other element of the cost price. The 666 and two-thirds working days expended in the production of the commodity create a new value of £200. One portion of this new value merely replaces the advanced variable capital of £100, or the price of the labour power employed. But this advanced capital value does not in any way go into the creation of the new value. So far as the advance of capital is concerned, labour power counts as a value, but in the process of production, it acts as the creator of value. The place of the value of the labour power that obtains within the advanced capital is taken in the actually functioning productive capital by living, value-creating labour power itself. The difference between these various elements of the commodity value, which together make up the cost price, leaps to the eye whenever a change takes place in the size of the value of either the expended constant or the expended variable part of the capital. Let the price of the same means of production, or of the constant part of capital, rise from £400 to £600, or, conversely, let it fall to £200. In the first case, it is not only the cost price of the commodity which rises from £500 to 600C plus 100V equals £700, but also the value of the commodity which rises from £600 to 600C plus 100V plus 100S equals £800. In the second case, it is not only the cost price which falls from £500 to 200C plus 100V equals £300, but also the value of the commodity which falls from £600 to 200C plus 100V plus 100S equals £400. Since the expended constant capital transfers its own value to the product, the value of the product rises or falls with the absolute magnitude of that capital value, other conditions remaining equal. Assume, on the other hand, that, other circumstances remaining unchanged, the price of the same amount of labour power rises from £100 to £150, or, conversely, that it falls from £100 to £50. In the first case, the cost price rises from £500 to 400C plus 150V equals £550, and falls, in the second case, from £500 to 400C plus 50V equals £450. But in either case, the commodity value remains unchanged, equals £600. One time it is 400C plus 150V plus 50S, and the other time 400C plus 50V plus 150S. The advanced variable capital does not add its own value to the product. The place of its value is taken in the product rather by a new value created by labour. Therefore, a change in the absolute magnitude of the variable capital, so far as it expresses merely a change in the price of labour power, does not in the least alter the absolute magnitude of the commodity value, because it does not alter anything in the absolute magnitude of the new value created by living labour power. Such a change rather affects only the relative proportion of the two component parts of the new value, of which one forms surplus value and the other makes good the variable capital, and therefore passes into the cost price of the commodity. The two elements of the cost price, in the present case 400C plus 100V, have only this in common, that they are both parts of the commodity value that replace advanced capital. But this true state of affairs necessarily appears reversed from the standpoint of capitalist production. The capitalist mode of production differs from the mode of production based on slavery, among other things, by the fact that in it the value, and accordingly the price of labour power, appears as the value or price of labour itself, or as wages. Capital Volume 1, Chapter 19. The variable part of the advanced capital, therefore, appears as capital expended in wages, as a capital value which pays for the value, and accordingly the price, of all the labour expended in production. Let us assume, for instance, that an average 10-hour social working day is incorporated in a sum of money amounting to 6 shillings. In that case, the advance of a variable capital of £100 represents the money expression of a value produced in 333 1/3 10-hour working days. But this value, representing purchased labour power in the capital advanced, does not, however, form a part of the actually functioning productive capital. Its place in the process of production is taken by living labour power. If, as in our illustration, the degree of exploitation of the latter is 100%, then it is expended during 666 2/3 10-hour working days, and thereby adds to the product a new value of £200. But in the capital advanced, the variable capital of £100 figures as capital invested in wages, or as the price of labour performed during 666 2/3 10-hour days. The sum of £100 divided by 666 2/3 gives us 3 shillings as the price of a 10-hour working day, which is equal in value to the product of 5 hours' labour. Now, if we compare the capital advanced on the one hand with the commodity value on the other, we find 1. Capital advanced, £500, equals £400 of capital expended in means of production, the price of means of production, plus £100 of capital expended in labour, the price of 666 2/3 working days, or wages for the same. 2. Value of commodities, £600, equals £500 representing the cost price, £400 price of expended means of production plus £100 price of expended 666 2/3 working days, plus £100 surplus value. In this formula, the portion of capital invested in labour power differs from that invested in means of production, such as cotton or coal, only by serving as payment for a materially different element of production, but not by any means because it serves a functionally different purpose in the process of creating commodity value, and thereby also in the process of the self-expansion of capital. The price of the means of production reappears in the cost price of the commodities, just as it figured in the capital advanced, and it does so because these means of production have been purposively consumed. The price or wages for the 666 and two-thirds working days consumed in the production of these commodities likewise reappears in the cost price of the commodities, just as it has figured in the capital advanced, and also because this amount of labour has been purposively expended. We see only finished and existing values, the portion of the value of the advanced capital which go into the making of the value of the product, but not the element creating new values. The distinction between constant and variable capital has disappeared. The entire cost price of £500 now has the double meaning that, first, it is that portion of the commodity value of £600 which replaces the capital of £500 expended in the production of the commodity, and that, secondly, this component of the commodity value exists only because it existed previously as the cost price of the elements of production employed, namely, means of production and labour, that is, as advanced capital. The capital value reappears as the cost price of a commodity because, and insofar as, it has been expended as a capital value. The fact that the various components of the value of the advanced capital have been expended for materially different elements of production, namely, for instruments of labour, raw materials, auxiliary materials, and labour, requires only that the cost price of the commodity must buy back these materially different elements of production. So far as the formation of the cost price is concerned, however, only one distinction is appreciable, namely, that between fixed and circulating capital. In our example, we have set down £20 for wear and tear of instruments of labour. 400c equals £20 for depreciation of instruments of labour, plus £380 for materials of production. Before the productive process, the value of these instruments of labour was, say, £1,200. After the commodities have been produced, it exists in two forms, the £20 as part of the value of the commodity, and £1,200 minus £20, or £1,180, as the remaining value of the instruments of labour, which, as before, are in the possession of the capitalist. In other words, as an element of his productive, not of his commodity, capital. Materials of production and wages, as distinct from means of labour, are entirely consumed in the production of the commodity, and thus their entire value goes into that of the produced commodity. We have seen how these various components of the advanced capital assume the forms of fixed and circulating capital in relation to the turnover. Accordingly, the capital advanced equals £1,680. That is, fixed capital of £1,200 plus circulating capital of £480, of which £380 is materials of production and £100 is wages. But the cost price of the commodity only equals £500, £20 for the wear and tear of the fixed capital and £480 for circulating capital. This difference between the cost price of the commodity and the capital advanced merely proves, however, that the cost price of the commodity is formed exclusively by the capital actually consumed in its production. Means of production valued at £1,200 are employed in producing the commodity, but only £20 of this advanced capital value are lost in production. Thus, the employed fixed capital goes only partially into the cost price of the commodity, because it is only partially consumed in its production. The employed circulating capital goes entirely into the cost price of the commodity, because it is entirely consumed in production. But does not this only prove that the consumed portions of the fixed and circulating capital pass uniformly pro rata to the magnitude of their values into the cost price of the commodity, and that this component of the value of the commodity originates solely with the capital expended in its production. If this were not so, it would be inexplicable why the advanced fixed capital of £1,200 should not, aside from the £20 which it loses in the productive process, also contribute the other £1,180 which it does not lose. This difference between fixed and circulating capital, with reference to the calculation of the cost price, therefore, only confirms the seeming origination of the cost price from the expended capital value, or the price paid by the capitalist himself for the expended elements of production, including labour. On the other hand, so far as the formation of value is concerned, the variable portion of capital invested in labour power is here emphatically identified under the head of circulating capital with constant capital, that part of capital which consists of materials of production. And this completes the mystification of the self-expansion process of capital. Footnote. In Capital Volume 1, Chapter 9, we have given the example of N. W. Senior to show what confusion this may create in the mind of the economist. End of footnote. So far we have considered just one element of the value of commodities, namely the cost price. We must now turn also to the other component of the value of commodities, namely the excess over the cost price, or the surplus value. In the first place, then, surplus value is the excess value of a commodity over and above its cost price. But since the cost price equals the value of the consumed capital into whose material elements it is continually reconverted, this excess value is an accretion in the value of the capital expended in the production of the commodity, and returning by way of its circulation. We have already seen earlier that, though S, the surplus value, springs merely from a change in the value of the variable capital V, and is therefore originally but an increment of variable capital, after the process of production is over, it nevertheless also forms an increment of C plus V, the expended total capital. The formula C plus V plus S, which indicates that S is produced through the conversion of a definite capital value V, advanced for labour power into a fluctuating magnitude, that is, of a constant magnitude into a variable one, may also be represented as C plus V plus S. Before production took place, we had a capital of £500. After production is completed, we have the capital of £500 plus a value increment of £100. Footnote. From what has gone before, we know that surplus value is purely the result of a variation in the value of V, of that portion of the capital which is transformed into labour power. Consequently, V plus S equals V plus delta V, or V plus an increment of V. But the fact that it is V, the variable capital alone, that varies, and the conditions of that variation are obscured by the circumstances that in consequence of the increase in the variable component of the capital, there is also an increase in the sum total of the advanced capital. It was originally £500 and becomes £590. Capital Volume 1, Chapter 9. End of footnote. However, surplus value forms an increment not only of the portion of the advanced capital which goes into the self-expansion process, but also of the portion which does not go into it. In other words, it is an accretion not only to the consumed capital made good out of the cost price of the commodity, but to all the capital invested in production. Before the production process, we had a capital valued at £1,680, namely £1,200 of fixed capital invested in means of production, only 20 of which go into the value of the commodity for wear and tear, plus £480 of circulating capital in materials of production and wages. After the production process, we have £1,180 as the constituent element of the value of the productive capital, plus a commodity capital of £600. By adding these two sums of value, we find that the capitalist now has a value of £1,780. After deducting his advanced total capital of £1,680, there remains a value increment of £100. The £100 of surplus value thus form as much of an increment in relation to the invested £1,680 as to its fraction of £500 expended during production. It is now clear to the capitalist that this increment of value springs from the productive processes undertaken with the capital, that it therefore springs from the capital itself, because it is there after the production process, while it is not there before it. As for the capital consumed in production, the surplus value seems to spring equally from all its different elements of value consisting of means of production and labour. For all these elements contribute equally to the formation of the cost price. All of them add their values, obtaining as advanced capital to the value of the product, and are not differentiated as constant and variable magnitudes of value. This becomes obvious if we assume for a moment that all the expended capital consisted either exclusively of wages or exclusively of the value of the means of production. In the first case, we should then have the commodity value of 500V plus 100S, instead of the commodity value of 400C plus 100V plus 100S. The capital of £500 laid out in wages represents the value of all the labour expended in the production of the commodity value of £600, and for just this reason forms the cost price of the entire product. But the formation of this cost price, whereby the value of the expended capital is reproduced as a constituent part of the value of the product, is the only process in the formation of this commodity value that is known to us. We do not know how its surplus value portion of £100 is formed. The same is true in the second case, in which the commodity value equals 500C plus 100S. We know in both cases that surplus value is derived from a given value, because this value was advanced in the form of productive capital, be it in the form of labour or of means of production. On the other hand, this advanced capital value cannot form surplus value for the reason that it has been expended, and therefore constitutes the cost price of the commodity. Precisely because it forms the cost price of the commodity, it does not form any surplus value, but merely an equivalent, a value replacing the expended capital. So far, therefore, as it forms surplus value, it does so not in its specific capacity as expended, but rather as advanced and hence utilized capital. For this reason, the surplus value arises as much out of the portion of the advanced capital which goes into the cost price of the commodity, as out of the portion which does not. In short, it arises equally out of the fixed and the circulating components of the utilized capital. The aggregate capital serves materially as the creator of products, the means of labour, as well as the materials of production and the labour. The total capital, materially, enters into the actual labour process, even though only a portion of it enters the process of self-expansion. This is, perhaps, the very reason why it contributes only in part to the formation of the cost price, but totally to the formation of surplus value. However that may be, the outcome is that surplus value springs simultaneously from all portions of the invested capital. This deduction may be substantially abbreviated by saying pointedly and concisely in the words of Malthus, quote, "The capitalist expects an equal profit upon all the parts of the capital which he advances," unquote. Malthus, Principles of Political Economy, 2nd edition, London, 1836. In its assumed capacity of offspring of the aggregate advanced capital, surplus value takes the converted form of profit. Hence, a certain value is capital when it is invested with a view to producing profit, or there is profit because a certain value was employed as capital. Quote, "Capital is that which is expended with a view to profit," unquote. Malthus, Definitions in Political Economy, London, 1827. Suppose profit is P. Then the formula commodity value equals C plus V plus S equals K plus S turns into the formula commodity value equals K plus P, or cost price plus profit. The profit, such as it is represented here, is thus the same as surplus value, only in a mystified form that is nonetheless a necessary outgrowth of the capitalist mode of production. The genesis of the mutation of values that occurs in the course of the production process must be transferred from the variable portion of the capital to the total capital, because there is no apparent distinction between constant and variable capital in the assumed formation of the cost price. Because at one pole the price of labor power assumes the transmuted form of wages, surplus value appears at the opposite pole in the transmuted form of profit. We have seen that the cost price of a commodity is smaller than its value. Since commodity value equals K plus S, commodity value equals cost price plus surplus value, it follows that K equals commodity value minus S. The formula commodity value equals K plus S reduces itself to commodity value equals K, or commodity value equals commodity cost price, only if S equals zero, a case which never occurs on the basis of capitalist production, although peculiar market conditions may reduce the selling price of commodities to the level of, or even below, their cost price. Hence, if a commodity is sold at its value, a profit is realized which is equal to the excess of its value over its cost price, and therefore equal to the entire surplus value incorporated in the value of the commodity. But the capitalist may sell a commodity at a profit even when he sells it below its value. So long as its selling price is higher than its cost price, though it may be lower than its value, a portion of the surplus value incorporated in it is always realized, thus always yielding a profit. In our illustration, the value of the commodity is £600, and the cost price £500. If the commodity is sold at 510, 520, 530, 560, or £590, it is sold respectively 90, 80, 70, 40, or £10 below its value. Yet a profit of £10, £20, £30, £60, or £90 respectively is realized in its sale. There is obviously an indefinite number of selling prices possible between the value of a commodity and its cost price. The greater the surplus value element of the value of a commodity, the greater the practical range of these intermediate prices. This explains more than just the everyday phenomena of competition, such as certain cases of underselling, abnormally low commodity prices in certain lines of industry, etc. See Capital Volume 1, Chapter 20. The fundamental law of capitalist competition, which political economy had not hitherto grasped, the law which regulates the general rate of profit and the so-called prices of production determined by it, rests, as we shall later see, on this difference between the value and the cost price of commodities, and on the resulting possibility of selling a commodity under its value at a profit. The minimal limit of the selling price of a commodity is its cost price. If it is sold under its cost price, the expended constituent elements of productive capital cannot be fully replaced out of the selling price. If this process continues, the value of the advanced capital disappears. From this point of view alone, the capitalist is inclined to regard the cost price as the true inner value of the commodity, because it is the price required for the bare conservation of his capital. But there is also this, that the cost price of a commodity is the purchase price paid by the capitalist himself for its production, that is, the purchase price determined by the production process itself. For this reason, the excess value, or the surplus value, realized in the sale of a commodity, appears to the capitalist as an excess of its selling price over its value, instead of an excess of its value over its cost price, so that accordingly the surplus value incorporated in a commodity is not realized through its sale, but springs out of the sale itself. We have given this illusion closer consideration in Capital Volume 1, Chapter 5. Contradictions in the General Formula of Capital. But revert here for a moment to the form in which it was reaffirmed by Torrance, among others, as an advance of political economy beyond Ricardo. Quote, "The natural price, consisting of the cost of production, or in other words, of the capital expended in raising or fabricating commodities, cannot include the profit. The farmer, we will suppose, expends 100 quarters of corn in cultivating his fields, and obtains in return 120 quarters. In this case, 20 quarters, being the excess of produce above expenditure, constitute the farmer's profit. But it would be absurd to call this excess or profit a part of the expenditures. The master manufacturer expends a certain quantity of raw material, of tools and implements of trade, and of subsistence for labour, and obtains in return a quantity of finished work. This finished work must possess a higher exchangeable value than the materials, tools, and subsistence, by the advance of which it was obtained." Unquote. Torrance concludes therefrom that the excess of the selling price over the cost price, or profit, is derived from the fact that the consumers, quote, "either by immediate or circuitous barter, give some greater portion of all the ingredients of capital than their production costs." Unquote. R. Torrance, An Essay on the Production of Wealth, London, 1821. Indeed, the excess, over a given magnitude, cannot form a part of this magnitude, and therefore the profit, the excess value of a commodity over the capitalist's expenditures, cannot form a part of these expenditures. Hence, if no other element than the value advance of the capitalist enters into the formation of the value of a commodity, it is inexplicable how more value should come out of production than went into it, for something cannot come out of nothing. But Torrance only evades this creation out of nothing by transferring it from the sphere of commodity production to that of commodity circulation. "Profit cannot come out of production," says Torrance, for otherwise it would already be contained in the cost of production, and there would not be a surplus over this cost. Profit cannot come out of the exchange of commodities, replies Ramsay, unless it already existed before this exchange. The sum of the value of the exchanged products is evidently not altered in the exchange of these products, whose sum of value it is. It is the same before and after the exchange. It should be noted here that Malthus refers expressly to the authority of Torrens. Malthus, Definitions in Political Economy, London, 1853, although he himself has a different explanation for the sale of commodities above their value, or rather, has no explanation at all, since all arguments of this sort never, in effect, fail to be reduced to the same thing as the once-famed negative weight of phlogiston. In a social order dominated by capitalist production, even the non-capitalist producer is gripped by capitalist conceptions. Balzac, who is generally remarkable for his profound grasp of reality, aptly describes in his last novel, Les Paysans, how a petty peasant performs many small tasks gratuitously for his usurer, whose goodwill he is eager to retain, and how he fancies that he does not give the latter something for nothing, because his own labour does not cost him any cash outlay. As for the usurer, he thus fells two dogs with one stone. He saves the cash outlay for wages, and enmeshes the peasant, who is gradually ruined by depriving his own field of labour, deeper and deeper in the spider-web of usury. The thoughtless conception that the cost price of a commodity constitutes its actual value, and that surplus value springs from selling the product above its value, so that commodities would be sold at their value if their selling price were to equal their cost price, that is, if it were to equal the price of the consumed means of production plus wages, has been heralded to the world as a newly discovered secret of socialism by Proudhon, with his customary quasi-scientific chicanery. Indeed, this reduction of the value of commodities to their cost price is the basis of his People's Bank. It was earlier shown, Capital, Volume 1, Chapter 9, that the various constituent elements of the value of a product may be represented in proportional parts of the product itself. For instance, if the value of 20 pounds of yarn is 30 shillings, namely 24 shillings of means of production, 3 shillings of labour power, and 3 shillings of surplus value, then this surplus value may be represented as 1/10 of the product, equals 2 pounds of yarn. Should these 20 pounds of yarn now be sold at their cost price, at 27 shillings, then the purchaser receives 2 pounds of yarn for nothing, or the article is sold 1/10 below its value. But the labourer has, as before, performed his surplus labour, only this time for the purchaser of the yarn, instead of the capitalist yarn producer. It would be altogether wrong to assume that if all commodities were sold at their cost price, the result would really be the same as if they had all been sold above their cost price, but at their value. For even if the value of the labour power, the length of the working day, and the degree of exploitation of labour were the same everywhere, the quantities of surplus value contained in the values of the various kinds of commodities would be unequal, depending on the different organic composition of the capitals advanced for their production. Footnote: the masses of value and of surplus value produced by different capitals, the value of labour power being given and its degree of exploitation being equal, vary directly as the amounts of the variable constituents of these capitals, that is, as their constituents transformed into living labor power. Capital, Volume 1, Chapter 11. End of footnote.